At first hearing, at first glance, it might seem as though the readings for today are all about water. And that is true, I guess, if you'll pardon the pun, on a shallow level. Yes. But there's a lot going on in these stories. In fact, there's so much we could spend days on them. The gospel especially, so rich it is with layer upon layer of images and concepts and ideas and deep theology and beautiful spirituality. But water definitely is at the heart of it all. That's probably fair, right? So a couple of things this morning about what God's trying to tell us about water and about life, about ourselves, and about how he loves us so much. Taking our cue from Exodus, the first reading, there we learned something very simple about water, which to us is a no-brainer, but back then perhaps it took some time for them to understand. We find the Israelites in the desert, making their way toward the promised land, facing difficulties and trials. And here, the famous story of the testing at Meribah and Massah, when they asked the question that we often ask ourselves, I certainly do, when things aren't going well, is God in our midst or not? Is he paying any attention or not? And what happens is they're out of water, something very basic that they need to live. So food, water, the essentials, these are things that they're looking for and they've not been given to them. And so they ask the question, where is God? Why are we out here? What is he doing? Is he here? Can we trust him? Moses, at God's command, strikes the rock, a most unlikely source of water, and water comes gushing out for all of them. So God saves them. He gives them their essentials. He gives them what they need to live in this life. So the lesson, the basic lesson, would be this. God gives the water. God gives the water. Now for us, maybe a bit of a no-brainer, but understand that back then, God was trying very patiently, and it took him centuries to accomplish this, to teach the Israelites that unlike all of their pagan neighbors, they're not supposed to worship different deities about harvests and fertility and about festivals of rain and wheat harvests and rivers that flood to water your fields and rains that come in the rainy season. All those were pagan deities that their neighbors worshiped to get what they needed. You want rain for your crops, you had to worship the river goddess or fertility goddesses or cults. Same thing for anything else that you wanted. They were all pagans. And God's trying to say to them, I give the water, not the river god, not the god of wheat, Dagon, or whoever else you want to think about. I give what you need, me. Stop worshiping them. So that's going on at the heart of the story. Really, he's trying to pull them out of their pagan reliances. Now, in that time, those kinds of worship practices were very much about control and manipulation. I do this for the gods to get this out of them, and they manipulate me, I manipulate them. That was their understanding of ancient religion. So what a bold concept that there'd be one God, an unseen God, who would give them water, not because of control, manipulation, but because he loves them. In fact, they ticked him off, and he still gave him water. How cool is that? So this is a bold thing to explain to these people. I give you water, God says. I give you what you need. I bring the rain. I bring the harvest. I make the sun shine on you. I do these things. You don't have to rely on the other deities. I do it because I love you. We are in friendship. Bold concept. Now, to us today, right? We have our own things that creep in around the edges of our own ideas of faith that are not unlike the ancient peoples. We are so good today at getting water, we take it for granted that we've got it, right? And we have science, we have medicine, we have technology, we have all these things that we rely on to get us what we need to basically live in this life, to get food, to get medical care, to get shelter. We can do all this stuff. And we get so good at it, we soon forget the simple lesson of Exodus, that God gives the water, that God gives life, that God gives us what we need. And those other things, technology, etc., they become their own little gods that we oftentimes worship, and they manipulate us, and we do them too, and pretty soon we've lost our faith in the one who loves us far more than Apple Computer possibly could, or any other company you can think of that's supposed to help you. God gives the water. God gives what we need for this life. He is the giver of all good gifts. And we always do the best when we remember that very simple truth that's easy to forget in every generation. Now, here's the thing, though. God spends centuries teaching this basic point. I give the water. I give what you need for this life. He teaches them. And then we get to the gospel centuries later, and he says, by the way, you don't want that water anyway. That's something else in mind for you. This is confusing at first. You might understand, no? The gospel, long and beautiful and complex, at the heart of it is this point. Jesus is going to offer this woman something that she really seeks but doesn't know what she's actually looking for. A different kind of water. A water with, if you will, real depth. Real depth of life, real depth of meaning and depth of love, the kind of what she's not going to find at the well. We would not be unlike this woman, I suppose. I mean, think about it in today's terms. I find it fascinating, as an aside, that while in this particular part of the world, we have drinkable water piped into every faucet of our house and multiple rooms, bathrooms, everything else, even though there's water everywhere, we go to the store to buy water. Figure that one out. So, next time you go to Walmart, you go to Meijer, you go to Pick and Save, you go to Sendix, you know, we're going there like the one with their bucket. We're going looking for water, right? Because we think it's going to make us live. This is what we want because the stuff from the tap is obviously bad. So we're going to go and get water at Walmart. So we're like this one. We get to the water aisle, or the one or two aisles, depending upon how big the store is. And there is Jesus standing in the water aisle saying, you don't want any of this water. It's not going to make you live. It might say that. It's called life water or vitamin water or whatever water. But it's not going to make you live. If you drink this, he says, you're just going to want more. You're just going to get thirsty again. You're just going to get hungry again from what's in the next aisle over. You don't want anything in this store on a very deep level. It's not going to satisfy you. And we scratch our heads and say, then what will? And he says very simply, I will. I am the living water. I'm it. I'm the water you really want. I'm the food you really want, he says in John chapter 6, a couple chapters later. I am what you crave. And everything in this aisle, he might say, at Pick and Save or whatever, it's not going to get you out of this life alive. It might try and tell you that on the label, but only I can get you out of this life alive. In fact, boiling this down, another water image, to all of our theology, the church says very simply, there's only one kind of water that's going to move us from this life to the next, to move us from mortality to immortality. Only one kind of water can possibly save us in the depths that we want, and it is over there in the font. That's it. Nothing else in this life is going to get us beyond the grave. Nothing else. That's Jesus' point. Yes, God gives the water. That's the Exodus story. We get that figured out, and he says, and by the way, I give you eternal water, living food, living bread, living word. I give you myself. And that's what you crave, he says to me and to you. Think of how he tells this woman such profound and interesting things about herself. Think how he knows her. Don't you and I all hunger on some deep, deep level to be known like that? To a person just look at us and peel away all the layers of disguises and false fronts that we put on and just go to the heart and say, I know who you are. Not in a condemning way, not like this, but in a profound, moving, inviting way to say, come into me. I will show you beautiful truths about yourself and about the world and about life. Come into friendship with me. I am the living water. Drink me in. That's what we all want, no? So God gives the water, he gives what's necessary for this life, and he also comes among us to give what must get us to the next life. Nobody else can. Only our friendship with him, which is rooted in baptism and sustained by our communion in the prayers, that brings us across the grave to the depths that we truly, truly desire. One more little layer to it from the Catechism. The Catechism references this gospel in different ways, and here's one. Paragraph 2560, it's like one of the first paragraphs on the section on prayer, part 4, it's a beautiful part of the catechism. It says, if you knew the gift of God, it's quoting this gospel passage, the wonder of prayer is revealed beside the well, Samaria, where we come seeking water. There Christ comes to meet every human being. It is he who first seeks us and asks for a drink. Jesus thirsts. His asking arises from the depths of God's desire for us. Whether realize it or not, prayer is the encounter of God's thirst with ours. To quote Augustine, God thirsts that we may thirst for him. Such a concept to sit with, isn't it? As they make their way through Lent to the beautiful Easter mysteries ahead, God thirsts for me and for you. And you know what prayer is? It's an exchange of thirst. It's drinking from mutual flowing faucets. We want the love that Christ wants to pour into our hearts more than anything else in the world. That's living water. And he wants it from us too. He thirsts. In fact, this says he starts the conversation. We might think we go looking for water, but long before that ever happened, he says, give me a drink. I thirst for you. I thirst for you. That's depths, the kind of which we can't find in this life. Only in him. Only in him. So, as we make our way through Lent, the few weeks that are left, let us sit with this simple command of the Lord that he gave to the Samaritan woman a long time ago. He gives it to every single one of us every single day. The same command. Give me a drink. Give me a drink. The God who gives the water, think Exodus, asks us for a drink. So deeply does he want us. That's profound. Let ourselves be wanted and pursued by the one who is thirsty for our souls and for our hearts. And as we fall into love with that one who loves us so much, living water wells up inside of us. Baptism comes alive in us. Grace grows in us. The world changes through us. And we have the kind of life that we all really want. Not this passing one, because it is, but the eternal one that only the Son from on high can give us with all the love that he can offer.